You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at 3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
But that's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Hello, and welcome to Good One, a podcast about jokes. I'm your host, Jesse David Fox. Each episode, a guest comes on to play a clip of one of their jokes and then discusses how they wrote it and how it fits into what they're trying to do with their comedy. I hope you enjoyed last week's preview of my new Patreon podcast, The Specials, but this week we're back to a traditional episode. Our guest is Bobby Moynihan, star of NBC's new Tina Fey and Robert Carlock sitcom Mr. Mayor and former Saturday Night Live cast member. Bobby getting cast on Saturday Night Live in 2008 was a bit of a light bulb moment for me in terms of watching the show. He was the first person that cast that I knew about beforehand. He was sort of like a mainstay of the New York comedy improv scene. And it's like the first time I really understood the sort of like minor league baseball, professional baseball-esque world in which Saturday Night Live operates in, where sort of people are bubbling up over in their system to eventually like get to play in the big leagues. And it immediately made me like 50 times more interested in the show. Like, I can't explain it. Like, truly, I became fascinated. Like, and from that moment on, Saturday Night Live became my favorite show to think about and talk about. Like, each episode, whatever. But like, literally the idea of SNL is like one of my favorite hobbies. Because I'm very cool. So I was so excited to talk to him. And honestly, it was the most fun. Like, literally after their interview, I told my producer, I think that was the most fun I had in, like, my entire life. Bobby had a few breakout characters and sketches from his time on the show. So I was delightfully shocked when he suggested we talk about Janet Peckinpah, a character he only did twice, plus one cut-for-time appearance that eventually made it online. But I'd later learn he tried to get her on like so many times. As his co-writer Brian Tucker told me, it's Bobby's comedy perfectly distilled. When you listen, you'll see it's stupid and silly and like really sweet, but also a little dirtier than you'd expect, and then at times a lot dirtier than you could ever imagine getting on television. We'll start with Janet Peckinpah's debut, which aired in February 2012 for the Channing Tatum episode. Channing Tatum plays Tom Brady. Later, we'll have a clip with Adam Levine as Adam Levine from January 2013. That rhymes. And Andrew Garfield as Andrew Garfield from May 2014. That does not rhyme. So here is Bobby Moynihan.
Anything else, sir?
No, thanks. I gotta work tomorrow.
Hey, are you Tom Brady?
Yeah.
Oh, man, yo, I'm glad my girl's not here. Like, you're like her one exception.
Stop.
Oh, shut your mouth! Tom Brady at Ruby Tuesdays?
Hey.
Hey, it's me! It's Janet Peckinpah! I'm just kidding. You don't know me. What are you doing here? Aren't you doing the Super Bowl tomorrow?
I couldn't sleep. I'm a little nervous before the big game.
Oh, this is crazy. I'm a lucky gal. Tom, look, this is a special night, so I'm just going to put it all out there. I'm 46 years young. I'm 5'5 this way, and this way. I'm basically a flesh cube. And, I know this is a little forward, but, why don't you throw one in me?
I'm sorry. Throw what in you?
Yeah, come on. Just throw one in me, okay? You're a quarterback, okay? Oh, I get it. You're nervous. Hey, bartender! Bartender! Hey!
Yes. All right.
Give me two shots of everything.
You know what? Look, you seem like a lot of fun, but I'm married.
Oh, that's right, to that model. Yeah. I can't compare there. I look like every bank teller in the world just squished together.
No, stop. Look, you're very pretty.
Oh, please. You'd hit me with a truck if it wasn't illegal.
I would never do that.
Oh, Tommy, that's so kind. Look at you. Come on. Tommy, take a chance. Throw one in me.
That's a nice offer, but I just...
Oh, come on. Who am I going to tell? My cat? Captain Corndog don't care. All he wants is 5 square meals and a good night's sleep between these boobs. He's a charmer, that one.
You know what, Janet? 1 minute ago, I was ready to walk out of here and make love to my supermodel wife.
Smart move.
And get some rest before the Super Bowl. Mm. But now, I'm listening.
Ooh. Well, I wasn't expecting that. Let's see, what else could I tell you? I got 2 elbows in this arm and only 1 in the other one. Let's see, I'm an amateur inventor. I came up with this thing where I cut up a bunch of ShamWows into weird shapes and call them ShamWhats.
I'm still with you.
Ooh, and let's see, I once swallowed an open safety pin but pooped out a closed one. That was weird.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'm in.
You're in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Oh, boy, I wasn't expecting that. This feels wrong. I'm not going to ruin another perfectly good marriage, not after what I did to Russell Brand and Katy Perry. Look, let's just be friends, okay? You want to just get up on the bar and just dance like idiots?
I'll take what I can get.
Oh, come on. It's your funeral. Let's do this. All right. I think I'm going to need a little help, Tommy. I haven't been up this high in a while.
Yeah, there you go, Dennis.
Feeling a little dizzy, Tom. Oh, good night. I had a great time that night, and I made a new friend in Tom Brady. The next day, the Patriots lost the Super Bowl by 68 points. You're welcome, New York. Go Giants!
So I am here with Bobby Moynihan. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. So I want to contextualize Janet over the course of your run on the show, because I think the timing is very significant. So I want to start with a question I've been asking recent guests who have worked on SNL. So like everyone who worked there, your story of how you got the job is one you have to tell almost every single day of your life. And it's like completely repetition at this point. So if you'll indulge me, I'd like you to tell your how you got SNL story as fast as possible. I will time you. The record is 39 seconds. I'll tell you when to start. Where is the clock? Are you ready? Ready, go.
I always wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. I tried really hard to get there. I found Upright Citizens Brigade. I figured that if I stayed there, Amy Poehler got the show right before I left. And then I was just like, I'm going to stay here and learn how to do comedy. I did. I met a bunch of people from SNL and I loved it. And then I got a couple meetings and I got.
You got it?
Yeah.
So I like that you yada yada all the other part. That's great. That's a new strategy.
I didn't yada yada at all. That was really it. That was just as quick as I could say it.
Yeah.
I just left out a million details.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now people know.
No, it was a 14-month nightmare.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm glad it happened.
There's this thing where I feel like there a lot of people that work in SNL dream of one day working on SNL, and then they start doing comedy, or you know, they do sketch or improv in New York, LA, or Chicago, and then they try to act cool about SNL, or like either because there's haters that generally surround those communities, or they just want to like put themselves as sort of equals as SNL cast members instead of like, I don't want to seem like a fan. I want to seem like I'm a person who could possibly work there. But you seem to like maintain being a fan of SNL up until the point where you're auditioning. Like, I feel like I heard stories of like, you never went to see the show, but you would like go to get autographs?
I tried to get in. I used to like try and get into the show on that line of trying to get in. I just never got in. Yeah, I was a huge fan of the show. I still am. I think there are definitely people who have been on the show who have been fans of the show.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I remember the overwhelming sense was the Sunday after my first episode was like dread, because it was like space camp. It was like, oh, well, that finally happened, but now it's the job. Like the reality of it set in. And that one fantasy episode was that first episode's the happiest I've ever been in my life.
You're in like that, every sketch that first episode, right?
I think in my 9 years there, it was one of the heaviest episodes I was ever in by leaps and bounds was my first episode.
So I want to talk about that first season. So it's 2008, 2009, which of course was an election year. I feel like I also note you're the only new cast member to start that day. Also, I believe, right? Yeah, because Michaela and
Michaela and Abby started like 8 episodes after I did.
Yeah.
And the day I started was me and John Mulaney. John Mulaney was a writer.
I feel like I also should note you were the first new male cast member they hired in 3 years. So I'm setting this up to sort of get a sense of you had a role seemingly in that first season of like you were the only featured player, we needed you. Can you talk about that first season, which you describe as space camp? What did that sort of mean in practice?
Looking back now with the hindsight of being gone from there from a couple of years, the first year is silly to me. Like, I feel silly about it. I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea what I had been handed. I had no idea what was about to happen. I was playing at SNL and just hoping to please Lauren and having just going like, that's Fred Armisen. like I was in complete, you know, I mean it, like space camp. Like I felt like Jinx put Max in space. Like it felt like, did you ever see that movie? Like I felt like, oh, there's a movie called Space Camp where a kid dreams to go to space camp and his little robot friend accidentally messes with the simulator and sends him to space and he gets to, and they end up like a bunch of 13-year-olds end up in space and they have to get back and they do. But that's what it felt like. That's what it still does. I look back on it like, It's insane. I just rewatched those Janet Peckinpah sketches for the first time in years, and I was laughing, not laughing because I thought they were funny, just laughing because I was like, this is insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's all insane.
So between between your first season and then Janet, there seemed to be sort of a dip that I would like to talk about to sort of like see your ascent through the ashes, but it's either through your second season or your third season. You've described it where it just got harder mentally and also sort of doing it. You know, what was that? How did it start? Do you have a sense of?
Yeah.
It
definitely, like, it became after 2 years, it definitely became a job, and it was more about panic. 2 years in, it was like, well, I have officially run out of all my ideas that I have had, I'm still have to pitch to people, but now you've been there long enough and kind of, I think looking back, I was a good enough writer that I could write for myself. So it wasn't, but I definitely could have used the help, it was kind of like, it wasn't like, well, Bobby's not, you know, we're not worried about Bobby. It felt a little bit like he can handle himself. And I was like, but I need help. Like, you know, I wasn't feeling that. And it was definitely around the same time, like Jay Farrow, Paul and Taryn came in. And it was like for 2 years, you know, I was the only new male on the cast. So if Andy was like, do I have to come in for that one line thing? I was like, I'll do it. I was still very eager. So then all of the, and you know, that adds up. You know, that adds up on your time in the show for the week. So when Jay, Paul, and Taryn came, it just became that much harder. But it wasn't like I was mad at them. It was just a math.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't like, like it was just like, oh yeah, they get those parts and they should be.
Yeah. I imagine it was hard on sort of both sides to both not get the benefit of starting with people, like starting with cast members and sort of having your crew, and also then later having sort of those people come, but they're sort of taking the things that, like, it's not just sort of you're all in the, we're going to divide these up together in the same way as when it's a whole cast coming in at the same year.
I wish I had come in with a couple people, obviously. Like, I wish I had, like, siblings, like Jay and all. Like, they came in with four people. And also, like, I love John Mulaney. But I knew him very well before we got the show. And there's always part of me that goes, oh, I wish, like, they had just thrown me in with a writer that I didn't know and we could have become a beautiful writing team. Like, you know, but it's all... In hindsight, there every day I think of a million things I did wrong at that place and a million things I did right by accident.
Did you, in that third season, did you feel like people noticed you were having this time? Have you talked to people and they're like, yeah, we saw you're going through it? Or do you feel like it was ultimately an internal thing? Like, did you feel like, the work that you're doing suffered?
It all felt like, oh, woe is me. Like, you know, it was everything, you know, then. Now I look back and I think it's hilarious because it's like, I was like, I don't know if I'm on the show that week. And like, then you would see your friends and they were like, dude, you're great. You're killing it. And like, you know, it's like, no one cares. No one who wasn't working in that building truly cared. But it was just the fact that you spent 72 hours trying to work on this thing and then it got cut last second. And then your brain, that happens to your brain 192 times in a couple years. And you're like, okay, it starts to change you.
Yeah, so 2011, 2012, which felt like a lot of things happened in that season. Especially, did it feel like a lot of the anxiety you had season three, by the time you're going to season four, had settled enough that you were able to sort of be a bit more yourself?
I'm guessing if it was season four, that was probably like my worst time. Like or at least my most confused mentally. Just meaning like, halfway through my time at SNL, I just started going like, I don't know. Like, I think I just started going, I don't know, Janet. The middle chunk of SNL.
Yeah.
Is the most I've blocked out. I think that's why when I watched these Janets, I went like, what? What did I just say? What was I thinking? Like, it's also. I haven't even gotten into it yet. I was going to say, but it's also secretly my favorite because of one singular 1 second moment that happened at a table read with it. And that's, Lauren laughed at the dirtiest joke possible. And I was just like, well, that's it. That's all I have to do.
Before we get to Jen, I want to ask one other thing before we get there, because I feel like it's important for context, which was, so Janet is February, 2012. December 2011 is when Drunk Uncle premieres.
Jeez. Wait. Say that one more time. So
it's the same season. So it's season 37. Janet premieres in February 2012. And then 3 months earlier, Drunk Uncle premieres. So that's December 2011. So like, I think
3 months earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay.
Christmas of, yeah, yeah. I feel like that, there's a few things about Drunk Uncle, especially if you watch back the first one. I know the last time you've watched the first Drunk Uncle back, but people, it's that thing that can sometimes happen with SNL where a character comes on that they do not know and the audience acts like they already know it. Do you remember the feeling of doing Drunk Uncle in terms of how that felt and how did it feel like a certain amount of momentum came from doing it?
100%. Drunk Uncle is like the perfect storm of insanity, meaning like I had worked on some, I think I've told this story, but like I had worked on something else, a different character, a suit salesman that I had met buying a suit that I was like, this is the character that is going to, I'll be doing this for years. And it bombed. At like 5 o'clock that morning for writing night, Colin was like, I got to do an update. Do you have anything? And we just started talking and we just, this drunk uncle thing. And I was, he's like, you know, what about that? And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. Like I had a list of characters that I had to submit when I first got the show. And I just started making up names because I was like, if I ever need these. And I had put drunk uncle Mike. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why. I just, whatever. You know, Chris Gethard.
Yeah.
I used to do a bit specifically for Chris Gethard because I didn't really drink at this point. And so I would just go to the bar with Chris Gethard and pretend to be really drunk, like a very drunk, sad rapper who was just singing, "Let me clear my throat," but while crying. And it was just a bit I did to make him laugh. And that's kind of, I feel like that's where it started, was like, just acting drunk, doing like weird things and making weird sounds to make Gethard laugh. Yeah. And when Colin came up with that, whatever, now I'm getting into that. But it just happened so quickly. It was like we wrote it in an hour and then we did it. And then that week, I remember that specific one. And if you go back and watch it, like the wig is a little different. Mm-hmm. And I am maybe possibly the most calm and patient I have ever been on my 9 years on that show. And I think that has a little bit to do with, like, I did well on Update. I think Update was like where I did my best work, and I had the confidence from doing Snooki for a little while. People really liked Snooki. I had done a couple updates, and Drunk Uncle was just like, it wasn't the thing I was thinking about that week. So I didn't have a care in the world. So I just went out there and I just remember it was the drunk thing. So I just tried to realistically look drunk. And I remember like looking at people in the audience, like, and staring at them like I used to do, like, you know, to Gethard or UCB, and just staring at, and like, I don't know, you don't do that at SNL. Like, you know, like I was, it was just different and it felt different and it was very patient. And then the second it hit, every single one after that is bonkers. And they're not patient and they're all just super weird. But that first one is different.
And did it give you a certain sort of confidence coming out of it?
I think the blind confidence of like, oh, I hope I get to do that again. The only time I had confidence was the second I rolled out and the second I rolled back out. Like, that was the only time I was super confident about it. And I don't even know if it was confidence. I was just really happy to be on Saturday Night Live, knowing that people liked it.
Yeah.
But I would come out as Drunk Uncle and they would cheer. It would feel like, oh, yay. Okay, you do want to see this. And then it was like, I would just get to play.
In between season 3 and Starting to Do Jan, you start doing Comedy Bang Bang. And I believe, if I have the timing correct, when you sort of like do your big breakout Comedy Bang Bang, it was probably during either the winter break or the sort of break, and during an SNL break right before you do Janet. Did having a space like that help, or did that influence you at all? Like, what was having that sort of different area where you can really, really play influence sort of your formation of sort of your comedic self?
Gosh, it's funny. It's so weird. I'm so bad with my timeline. It's very, I was such a nerd about SNL and could tell you anything, but ever since I got on it, like it's all disrupted, but
sure.
It's very crazy to hear all that like that was the timing of it. No, Comedy Bang Bang. I remember just going in with Scott and Paul and saying, like, they were like, what do you have? And I literally was just, I had the name Forville, and they said, why Forville? And I said, it was one less than Fievel from the mouse. And like, that was the only joke. That was it. And like the whole stabbing thing, it was all like, that was all silly, but I had that outlet with like UCB.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it wasn't crazy. Somebody recently said something to me or asked me a question. They were like, oh, your SNL character, Forville. And I was like, oh no, that's Comedy Bang Bang. And it's like, it never, it was funny to me. Like, it never, it never dawned on me that it was like two different. Like, it was just like, oh no, that's that dumb thing I do over there.
Yeah, yeah. So
let's talk about Janet. It's the first week in February. To help you with the timeline, it's the first week in February. Y'all are coming off a 2-week break. Channing Tatum is the host. So before we get into the details, where did the idea of Janet first start? What is the sort of kernel that she was born out of?
I had used when I was in college, I saw a billboard that said Janet Peckinpah. I don't even remember what it was. I just remember seeing a billboard with the name Janet Peckinpah on it. And I don't know why. I just thought it was a great name. And forever, whenever I did improv, I would just name people, Mr. Peckinpah. It was just one of those things, you know, it was just, I have no idea. It was just one of those silly things that happened. And I just, that was it. I'm guessing now, because of Drunk Uncle, maybe I had some goodwill. And they were like, oh, no, I'm a complete idiot. I wrote this sketch. Yeah, I wrote this sketch with Brian Tucker and John Solomon. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was based on, we did it originally, and this one didn't get on. It didn't air. It was with Helen Mirren. And I was Janet Peckinpah, and Helen Mirren, we were two women running for PTA, mm-hmm. or the president of the PTA at a school. And Helen Mirren, like, finished this amazing speech, and then it was like, and now, you know, our other candidate for PTA president is Janet Peckinpah. And the whole joke was like, look, I know I'm not going to win. And I think that's what it came from. Like, it was like, I was just doing some joke with Tucker, and I said, look, I know I'm a piece of shit. And it was just like, he thought it was funny that someone would just immediately be like, look, and be not on their side and explain how awful they were. And like, we just started talking about that. And it was a PTA sketch. And that was the joke, was just a woman who didn't believe in herself at all.
Really, and I don't know why didn't believe in herself.
Very, and that was it. Very confidently didn't believe in herself, and like it almost got on, but it didn't, and like it just didn't. You know, it was me in a dress being a weirdo, and that never got on. And I also think now I probably shouldn't ever do Janet again. Definitely shouldn't. But it was just a weird thing, and then. I remember for some reason, I think it was Mike O'Brien was like, why don't you, we were talking about Janet, what if Janet was like a swinger lady, and we tried it with like that, with like her hitting on a guy, and it didn't work, and Lauren was like, it has to be a celebrity, and Channing Tatum didn't want to play himself, or something like that. It was Mike O'Brien. I remember it was Mike O'Brien that said, you know, the Super Bowl's tomorrow. Why don't you just have him play Tom Brady? And that was it. And then it's just like, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, Tom Brady's at a Ruby Tuesdays the night before the Super Bowl. And he sleeps with Janet Peckinpah. And that's why they lose. And like, that was just like the weird conceit of it. And then it was just throwing in as many self-deprecating dirty jokes as we could and falling off the bar at the end, and I almost died on air.
Yeah.
It's bonkers to think about it. It's insane. I watched that sketch, especially the Andrew Garfield one that got cut for time, and I don't remember it. It's
so let's go through the sort of the elements. Where did the voice then come from?
I never realized it's an impression of a relative. It's an impression of a friend's relative that I can't name. But just it always talk like this, and everything was like, oh, I very guttural, and it just made me laugh. It just made me laugh to talk like that.
When you had the voice, did you immediately know what she looked like?
No. Well, that was the thing. Like, at first, I think it was like they said a woman, and I just said Janet Peckinpah because I thought it was funny. it's just a funny name to say in my mind. And and then I think that was it, was just like the minute we knew she was self-deprecating, and I think it was Tucker who came up with, I'm 5'5", this way, this way, this way, I'm basically a flesh cube. And then it was just that. It was just how do we can now spend the next 3 hours making these awful jokes and saying these awful things that this awful woman has done. But she's kind of great because she don't care.
Yeah, I talked to Brian a little bit about it earlier today, and he was saying...
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
And he was like, he even to him, and who's been on the show, who's on the show longer than you, he's still there. He's like, it is one of the sketches that he remembers being not necessarily the most jokes were able to come out of the idea of this. They just remembers yes. how many jokes you guys were able to write.
Hundreds, hundreds and hundreds of jokes that we didn't need. We could have done forever because she hated herself.
What was your thinking about doing a sort of drag character or character in drag? I, you know, like obviously you had already done Snooki, but I feel like it didn't feel like it felt like people were doing a little bit less at that time in sort of comedy history.
100%. I think like at that point, Keenan had made like a very like clear thing that he was not going to do it anymore just because he had done it so much. But like, to be very honest, in hindsight, like it was a way to get on the show. Like, unfortunately, you know, it was like put the guy in a wig, you know, like I remember playing Rosie O'Donnell once and it was like like an impression and they were like, you're going to be Rose. Like, it just like I ended up as Rosie O'Donnell. And now I'm like, I hate that. Like if I could take one thing, well, there's a couple things, but that would definitely be one of them just because it felt unnecessary. And now it was just, but at the time it was just like, I'll do anything to get on the show. But for Janet, it didn't necessarily, it wasn't like, look, I'm a, like, isn't it hilarious that I'm dressed as a lady? It was just like, in my dumb, scared SNL stoned mind at the time, probably, I was like, this is me. This is me if I had to date. Janet is just Bobby Moynihan as an older lady. And just
I want to follow up on something you said. Did you write high? Was there a time in the Tuesday night you were like, let me see if I can think of new ideas if I was high?
I think I can say in the beginning, absolutely not. I was so terrified, but like, yeah, at some point, yeah, definitely. I was good friends with Keenan.
We'll leave it at that. When you're doing a character like that in general or on SNL, how deep in character are you?
I mean, I don't think I'm like a, excuse me for a moment, I need to get into character, but like, I kind of am, I guess. Like, I definitely, like, for Drunk Uncle, like the first like 3 minutes, like the 3 minutes before I went on for Drunk Uncle, I definitely like stood over in a corner and kind of wobbled and pretended a little, you know, like I definitely did it more, but that was more just to kind of, but like I just watched Janet with all three of them. And my overwhelming sense when it was over was I have absolutely almost no recollection of doing these sketches. I remember it fondly. I love her. It's one of my favorite things, but the reality of it is just like, it was such a weird time in my life. Like that Andrew Garfield one is bonkers. Yeah. And I also did that one with Drake and it never aired. And then we did it with Andrew Garfield.
Here we go. Yeah. Hey, Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Enough of the chit chat, huh? Just throw one in me. Come on. I think it's time for Peter Parker to turn into Peter Porker.
Whoa. Janet, whoa, slow down. Wait, slow down.
Hey, Mr. Bean. Come on. Why don't you pull out that little beef eater of yours and let me give it a couple tugs, huh? What do you say, old chap?
I just don't know, Janet. You're incredible, but now that this is actually happening, I'm not sure that I can handle it. Can we just talk for a minute?
Yeah, okay. Well, how about you tell me something about you then?
Okay. Right. Okay, well, I was actually born in Los Angeles, but I was raised in Surrey.
Wow. Yeah, I was born underground and raised in secret.
I'm I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who.
Oh, wow. I really like Dr. Lou. He's my gynecologist. I think I gave him PTSD pretty bad, though.
Oh, and I used to be a gymnast?
Oh, what a coincidence. I was once mistaken for Bella Caroli all the time.
Well, you see, that's so interesting. Can you tell me more about you, Janet?
Me? Well, okay. Let's see. I used to strip under the name SpongeBob Square Lady.
Oh, okay.
That was pretty weird.
Yeah, that's cool.
Let's see. Once I got all the way from Baltimore to New Delhi in the wheel well of a plane, it did not make the news.
Yeah, Brian said you must have done six or seven times. Either pitched it or went to air or...
I think like five or six. In the original one? Oh, no. Not the original one. The second one with Adam Levine at Dress... Fred was my husband, and he was just sitting in the back of the room the whole time putting a ship in a bottle. And he was like, isn't your husband going to be upset? And I was like, nah, he don't care. And Fred never said a word. And it just cut to Fred every once in a while, putting the ship in the bottle and not looking up. And that was my favorite joke. And Lauren was like, it's too depressing.
Can you? So, were there any other major changes that happened between Wednesday and air?
Oh, I mean, all the time. Janet was a weird one because, like, I feel like dirty stuff really didn't fly at SNL.
Yeah.
Really overtly dirty stuff, and some of the stuff that I said as Janet, like, I can't believe they let me say it on network television. Like, it just got through for some reason. Like, I remember we would put in really dirty jokes so that those would get cut. And we wouldn't have to, and sometimes those would get in. And it was like, maybe I shouldn't say this.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially the Adam Levine one.
Yeah.
There's a couple real zingers in that one.
All right. And I'm just looking to settle down with, like, a nice girl.
Well, then why don't you settle down on this puppy right here? Come on.
Wow, it's just, Janet, what is it about you that's just so...
Diabetic?
I was going to say irresistible.
Ooh, getting the... Shall we retire to the boudoir? I hope Danny Glover doesn't make you uncomfortable. I am a fan. And when Danny goes down, so do I.
This is all happening so fast.
Hey, relax, okay? This is not my first time with a superstar.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Sure, yeah. I bagged Tom Brady once, Magic Johnson before, and the Giant from that Billy Crystal movie, My Giant, and the title is apt. Now let's get that big old ding-dong out and let me slap it around for a little while. Come on. I've been flicking my bean all day thinking about this.
Also, the Adam Levine one, sorry, this is just a side note that popped in my head. Adam Levine one is one of the first times ever where I remember Lorne, it was the last sketch of the night, and Lorne just walked in like right before it happened, like 10 seconds before we're about to go on, and he went, we need some time, maybe pick up some pace, maybe, you know, get through it. And it was the first time, and he was really kind of like, he never kind of did that, especially towards the end of the show. And, like, I felt, like, instantly, it truly in the moment felt like he was like, Bobby, I like this weird one, so could you do it quick so the whole thing airs? And, like, I have absolutely no idea if that's what he meant, but it felt like it. So I was extra jazzed and talking very fast in that Adam one.
So you mentioned at table, Lorne laughed at a joke that, was that what you said?
There was some joke. It was in the first one. It was in the very first one because that's what I think it's just what got it on.
Yeah.
I just said something awful about myself. Maybe it might have been the – you want to hear something? I pooped out – I swallowed an open safety pin and pooped out a closed one or some weird thing. I don't know if it's that one. I can't give it credit. But Lorne just like – instantly started laughing, like this beet red laughing that Lorne gets every once in a while, that when you see that laugh, you just go like, oh God, thank God, I made it here, and I did that to that man. And it was just some dirty Janet joke, and it just got him. And I just remember thinking like, oh, yay. And I think he just had a weird soft spot for Janet. I think Janet was kind of like, I'll throw her in, and if we need to cut it, we'll cut Janet. But, like, let's have her around just in case. That's what it always felt like.
That joke, let's say it is that joke, because it is – I hope it's that joke that did it, because it is – I want to – and maybe it's like partly it's stupid, or partly it's sort of like just really lowbrow and like.
It was just about making Tucker laugh. Me and Tucker, Brian Tucker and Solomon were just two of the greatest guys, and two of the, maybe two of the guys that guided me through there as far as very nice, being nice to me and kind of teaching me about writing and that being patient with me and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think that line, like just improvising with Brian, I don't remember if this one aired, but it was just Brian really liked talking in that voice, and so Brian just improvised. One time I went to a wedding and I took out a big bite of the cake, and I didn't want anybody to know, so I replaced it with wet toilet paper. And like it was just like these actual scenarios that Janet had been in that no one cared about except Janet. She hated it. Like there was something about like I once flew from New Jersey to New Delhi in the wheel well of an airplane and it didn't make the news. Like it was just like, that was it. It was just like, how horrible can we make this woman's life? But she, you know what? She's still trucking along.
Yeah,
and why not? And why not have sex with her also? Because we're all just trying to have a good time. Like,
we're right back with more Bobby Moynihan.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at 3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
And we're back with Bobby Moynihan. How do you feel about the word stupid? Like, what does that mean to you? I feel like different comedians, I feel like a lot of comedians do like it, but it is hypothetically pejorative. What does stupid mean to you? And what do you like about it?
It's funny. It's probably it definitely is like a terrible word to use now, but it's just silly. Like the part, like Zach Galifianakis is one of the greatest comedians in the world. Like, you know, he sits on a chair, the leg breaks, it falls. I'll watch it every day for the rest of my life. I think he's so silly. Like he's just having a good time. And that's it. Like, it's like, I watch Janet and I go, I have no idea what this was, but I know that for a couple hours in the middle of the night, I wasn't terrified. I was having a great time making up jokes, and it showed because it made me happy, and I had a good, and like that was, for me, that's when I felt SNL was going the best, was when I was having a good time and just went, I don't care, I'm on SNL.
The other joke I want to ask you about, so you mentioned that the 5 foot this way, 5 foot this way, 5 foot this way, and this way.
I just want to say quickly, I love that we're talking about Janet Peckinpah right now. It's so silly.
Me too. I mentioned before, but I was like, I can't imagine he wants to keep on talking about drunk uncle. I imagine. So it's like, what is he going to pick?
Well, it's funny. It's weird now too, because like, to be honest, like talking about drunk uncle, I went like, God, it's hard to justify that character, especially now. Like the last one I did was like the day Trump was there, and I did it and like I was making fun of him, and the whole joke was like, isn't it hilarious, like, you know, like how stupid these dumb racist people are. And he came up and shook my hand afterwards and was like, thank you for saying all those great things. And it was like, now I look back at Drunk Uncle and I go, you know, maybe, you know, oof. You know, it's not as funny as it used to be. But then again, with Janet too. Yeah. Like, I don't think I would do that now. I would definitely not do that now out of respect.
To respect to who?
Like, well, I mean, like, just getting, you know, just to play a woman now is a very different thing. And I go, like, I guess it's not needed. I could play Janet in a different way if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And that... It's crazy to think about. Like,
yeah, I mean, I imagine
some of the stuff on SNL that I did, now it just goes like, wow, can't do that. Shouldn't have done that.
There is a bit of, it's a thing that happens in comedy where you can't necessarily know what people are laughing at. right? So it's like, I think there's a part of it, at least for, clearly you love this person. Like, to me, it's clear you love this person. And what is so interesting is sort of the contrast of both how instantly self-deprecating she is and how instantly confident she is. Like, it's sort of like, this is part of it, and it's disarming, and it, and you see how it works with these men. But like, I imagine there might be people who are laughing at, like, yeah, let's make fun of this lady for being these traits.
Oh, 1,000%. One of the biggest laughs in the one with Andrew Garfield is when I start dancing and I'm in lingerie, and the audience is laughing at how weird my body looks, and so am I. Like, because I think it looks weird when I do that in lingerie. And there's also the part of me that now at 44 goes like, you don't need to do that. Like, it's like, but at the time I thought it was hilarious, and it is. I mean, yeah. Like Andrew started laughing. Like, you know, like, it's just like,
it is really, it's a very funny dance.
It's so stupid. It was stupidity, and like the audacity of saying to a grown man, don't get a boner from looking at this, is what made me laugh about it. But like, yeah, like, it's like, now I go like, I don't need to do that.
Well, the thing that I was wondering about, you know, I don't remember which podcast, but on podcast you said, you know, if it wasn't for fat jokes, you wouldn't be on SNL. Like clearly you're, as a fan of the show, you know, there are types that Lorne likes. They're sort of comedic types in general. Like, Lorne didn't invent the idea of it. You know, this is a character where you mention her body in a way that maybe some other characters that's not as explicitly part of it. How do you feel about it? What did you or do you think about that expectations of sort of what, when you are this role in SNL and what expectations people had of you, what you liked or didn't like about it, you know?
It's a shame that it exists. It definitely existed, you know, like you get typecast, but that's in all of acting, not just yeah. SNL, but it definitely happened at SNL. And I think now it's some of the moments where, like, something like that Beyonce sketch, where it was like, the original idea was just like, Keenan showed me that Beyonce video and I just went like, ooh, if I was a backup dancer in that leotard, like, and when that, after it aired and where it got, you know, like, it was like, it wasn't a really about how I looked in that leotard at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it just kind of got me there. So hopefully some of it led to some good stuff, but then there were definitely some moments when I used it to get on the show and maybe shouldn't have. Or I don't know if I've ever said this publicly, but there was that Glenn Thrush dude. I had to play that Glenn Thrush guy. He's like a reporter or some garbage.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a real person. I this is terrible, but cold open, you know, like, we were playing, I was just this guy, and in between Dress and Air, they were like, you have to go get your bald cap. And I was like, my bald cap? I'm just playing a reporter. And they were like, no, he's a real guy. And I was like, oh, I did not know this. Looked at his couple of videos. He seemed like a pretty normal guy. I just did it. And like, on Twitter or something, he's called me fat. Like, he was just like, he was like, wow, I was on SNL, but I was played by the fat. Like, he just made a bunch of fat jokes. And I was like, who the heck is this guy? Yeah. And then like a day later, he called and asked for my autograph, an autographed picture. And I just never answered, but I never talked to the guy because I was just like, oh, that guy sucks.
Yeah.
But if you go and watch, I played him 3 more times and I keep getting fatter because I have more fat suits on. I just kept putting on more fat suits. Mm-hmm. But the reality of that is, like, in my mind, I was like, that's gotcha. Thanks for being a troll, asshole. But then, like, I look back and I was like, nobody noticed. No, but they were so that means somebody at home was like, oh, Bobby's getting big.
I want to ask you about the first time you fall from the bar. We obviously, I assume you fell in padding, but it's a very, how do you, I'm always interested in physical comedy, especially on SNL, where there's the camera setup is what the camera setup is. How do you practice it? How do you do it? What was that one like?
I'm gonna go as far as saying I definitely have a very huge memory of that one, which was like, I was definitely a little cocky and I was like, man, I got this. It's a pratfall. Like, I'm just going to fall. and kind of like breezed through it. And we had mats, but like, you know, on the day they make these, this bar that's a breakaway bar and it's hand painted and they make three or four of them for the day and you practice it twice. And, you know, and it was kind of like, you know, you put back in the back of your mind, you're always going, I'm not really doing this until I get on air, because that's the only time it counts for the rest of history, is what you, especially 4 years deep. So I remember that one being like, if I don't nail this fall, I whatever. But, and it's also, there's like a freeze frame at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And the way that the freeze frame is, I couldn't move. I had to stay on the ground because if I stood up, I would have been on camera, which was the first mistake, because that decision, I think, is what causes it. If you watch the sketch, you see Channing Tatum and he looks genuinely frightened, because I went down, like I threw myself 10 feet off the ground into a mat. And I scared everybody in the studio, I think. But the whole thing was, there's a voiceover that comes on with a graphic, but not in the studio. So in the studio, I'm just completely still. So everyone just assumed, oh my God, this poor woman just died. you could see on the look on his face, like he looks like, are you okay? And I'm totally fine. And I remember giving him like a thumbs up, and I remember that silence of while the voiceover was playing, where I almost screamed at the end, I'm okay, because like I wanted it to be funny, like not scary. But I remember thinking, what if I scream I'm okay? And I was like, Lamar, don't kill me. But I totally should have.
It speaks to, you know, their, you know, obviously in retrospect, this had to be the type of sketch it was, where it's like a live sketch with another person. I think it was sort of right in that window where the show wasn't doing that many pre-tapes. It's before the sort of like pre-tape revolution that like really came a few years later. Mm-hmm. But what, in general, like especially as you look back on it, what do you like about it being a not a weekend update? Like, what do you like about it being the type of sketch it was, where it was a live sketch with an audience, where you got to interact with a person like that?
It's funny being out now a couple years and thinking back, it's when I was on the show, it was the ones that hit, it was the ones that mourned, like, you know, like Drunk Uncle or Snooki or Anthony Crispino or something that, like, you know, people kind of latched onto. And now as I leave, it's like the Janet Peckinpahs, I did this character called Kirby, who was an astronaut who missed his kitty cat. Like those 10 to 1 slot kind of things where I just liked the weirder things that. There was a sketch that we did with Steve Buscemi. I don't know if it aired. I don't think it did, but we did it a couple times. I know we did it with Steve Buscemi once, where the whole joke was Abby Elliott was having a sleepover with a bunch of girls and he was her dad. And I was a little girl who was being bullied by the rest of them sitting in the kitchen. And I just decided to hang out with her dad. And it was just like, so they're making fun of you? And I was like, yeah. And like, I didn't change my voice much. I had braces and like put some pajamas. And he was just like, yeah, kids can be mean. And I was like, yeah. And it was just this like normal. It was hilarious. And the girls kept coming in and being mean. And I was just this girl who got, I don't know. Maybe I think it's funny to beat up on myself.
Yeah, I think there's also... Well, two things. One, why do you think that is? Do you think it's funny?
I don't know. Now, after therapy, no, yeah, I guess there is a tiny part of me that just thinks the absurdity, that line of like real and absurd, is now, especially now, officially blurred. And it just really makes me laugh to play around in that, I guess.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking when you're describing this, I was like, I literally thought first, I wonder if Janet has seen Nanette. And then I was like, wait, well, Janet's not a person. But there
There is a real
Janet
Peckinpah.
She was a newscaster in Connecticut. Very different.
That's what I found out from the billboard. It was an NBC. She was like a weather person, but then she's now on, or was a congresswoman or
something. She ran for Congress something. Yeah, yeah.
Never had anything to do with that poor woman. I just love her name. And if she can hear this, if for some reason she ever hears this, I love you.
Well, her name is going to be back in the news because of this episode.
I remember seeing an article where she said to a news reporter, and I feel bad about this, that she had to say this to another human being, that she does not, in fact, have two elbows and one arm in real life. And I felt really bad about that.
It is a live sketch. And the weird things as live sketches, which I think get underrated, which is, I think, tonally, you can do weird things pre-tape that you can't do live because you can control. But there is something that I think certain cast members really like about what happens when you put that tension of having an audience watch this. Like, you can't hide, right? Pre-tape, you're there, but you can't sense it. There's that moment where there's something about watching SNL, especially if you watch it live, where it's like, you know, Bobby's a person doing this and you're hearing the audience. And there's that's what's so exciting about doing a weird thing like this in front of people.
I definitely got the sense when I was doing Janet, I was like, I would do a joke and it wouldn't land.
Yeah.
And I would go, I don't think that landed because the people in this studio are going, what the fuck is happening? And not necessarily in a bad way, but it would just be like, it was so dense and so real and so like, not like, you know, like here's an SNL character, with an opening theme song. And here's the three things they do weird. It was like, no, Janet's going to come out, ask you to sleep with her, tell you why you shouldn't,
and then
do it anyway. And then somehow physically hurt herself immensely or get trapped in some physical thing.
There was the thing that happens is, well, it changes, right? So with Tom Brady, she says, sleep with me. He says no. Then he says yes. And then she goes, never mind. And then she did.
You don't want to do this. Because she has a heart.
Yeah, yeah. And then both Adam and Andrew, they're into it. And then she sort of it's unclear if she actually wants to sleep with these people, if it's all a mind game.
Yeah, yeah. That seems about right. I think Janet doesn't know what she wants.
I think that's the other thing, the thing that I was curious about is when you're doing or repeating a character is like, there are certain beats, comedic beats you redo, right? So it's like the joke of I'm all X types of people squeezed together. Do you each time? Are there like, is it natural where you like, do you actually be like, oh, what is the Janet sketch? We have to recreate it. Like, how deliberate are people when you're recreating to sort of follow an outline?
Yeah. I mean, like it felt like the sketches that worked were the ones that created their own outline after while it was being created, if that makes sense. Like with Drunk Uncle, after the first one kind of hit, it was like, okay, come out doing something weird, slowly, try to make sense, slowly lose it.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a moment where you start crying, and then when Seth asks you what's wrong, you don't answer and you sing a song.
Yeah.
And then there's the section of say five things really quickly together. Like it definitely became, you know, a formula like that. By the third Drunk Uncle, we had figured out that formula. You know what I mean? Like it had fully formed. I remember with Riblet was nothing. Like it was my friend from college called me up the night that Che started and was like, I think this guy sucks. I can do his job better than him. And I told Che that and I was just like, isn't that hilarious? And we just decided to write this character that like Che's buddy from high school who was like, I could do this. And I also just wanted to try and do update jokes. But like that was kind of it. But for some reason at Dress, I said, it's not that hard. Like, and I just really laid into it and it kind of made Che laugh. And then like now when people talk about that, like they go, oh, you're going to lose your job. And I think that's hilarious. Cause it's just like, that was something that just, I improvised a dress. Yeah. It made Che laugh and we ended up doing it on the air. It was never part of it, but then that became like the main part of it.
Yeah, I think also, you know, it's interesting when you think back at this time of SNL, because it's like really the transition between, you know, YouTube starts a few years before. So like the idea of a recurring character completely changes. Like, recurring characters only became update characters like in your tenure. You like, you show the transition out of that. Did you feel that?
Yes, I remember. I remember Andy talking to Andy Samberg in his office and saying like, man, that digital short was great. And he was like, yeah, they're going to put it on this thing called YouTube. It's like a place. And I remember being like, what are you talking about? And he was just like, yeah, we're going to get stock in this thing called YouTube. Like we're putting thing on YouTube. And I remember being like, you got robbed. Like, yeah. Like by this weird company, like, you know, and now look at it. But, yeah, and then I remember, like, I think it was, like, Gilly, like, Kristen doing Gilly, like, I think, like, I physically overheard Lorne having the conversation, like, this is it, this is the last, like, you know, character that we'll see, like, you know, because it was just, like, it was, like, Wayne's World, they did it. It was like 13 times. I forget what it was, but it was like over a certain amount of, like, you know, like in those 2 weeks that it wasn't on, you couldn't watch it 100 times. And it was like, you would do a character and it was on. Now it's like you put it on Twitter and that's where people see the show, is they watch SNL on clips on Twitter.
They're putting clips. When they started putting clips on during the show, I was like, this is a completely different show.
Yeah, I would be update, and I would be like, oh, I'm done for the show, and I would go on Twitter and watch the sketch I had just done and be like, oh, it came out all right.
Yeah.
Like, that was truly insane. I remember walking home through Times Square one night at like 1:05 and just a person looking at me and being like, what the? You were just on and I was like, I wasn't in the show that much.
I want to talk about your last season briefly, which was 2016-2017, which was a big season for the show for a variety of reasons. Obviously, that was the election year. At the time, I wrote something about, despite the attention, the positive attention the show was getting, there seemed to be, from what I was hearing, it was a very hard time to work on the show. That season, that was a very frustrating time. It seemed like a combination of a few factors, which was there were fewer commercial breaks. So there was then more sketches, and it meant a ton of pre-taped sketches. And the cast was still relatively small compared to even now. And then, and though it didn't seem like a lot of the cast members were jealous that they didn't get to play Trump, like, or the big political roles, it did seem like a lot of the attention was on that stuff. So there wasn't the same, like, I'm doing my thing and people care about it. So I guess the question is, what was that season like for you, or especially looking back, what did it reveal about what you liked about working in that show? Sort of like, you know, you were pretty candid in interviews afterwards that it was not, it was a hard season even for you. And so, you know, what was it like, but also sort of what did it affirm to you about what you did like being on the show? Because,
It was a weird season. We lost Taryn and Jay. I remember that being extremely hard. I remember that being like just not as fun. Like I just wasn't having as much fun because my friends weren't there. It's funny. I remember that last season, like the first episode I got something on that I had been trying to get on for a while. It was the Margot Robbie episode. I got on this sketch that I had written about the librarian. But I thought that was a fun sketch. And like, I remember like, oh, well, you know what? This is probably my last season and this is a great way to start. And then like, I also think it was like around Trump, like the election, and like we didn't really know what was going on. And I think it was just the start of what now has become this nightmare. Maybe it was just that, but
yeah.
And then like a couple episodes in was David Pumpkins. And like when I look back, like David Pumpkins is the bright spot of that season. Like as far as like, there are some seasons of SNL, like the 40th and like the things where I'm just like so many amazing things happen. But definitely now, you know, doing interviews right after you leave SNL and doing one about Janet Peckinpah 3 years later is a very different thing. I don't talk about SNL every day. I did for 10 years of my life. So this is bonkers. But thinking back about it now, especially my last year, I had like a slow wind down and like a perfect ending for myself, for like 15-year-old Bobby. And like, I can't, for all the times I wish I could go back and go, oh God, I wish I had just shut my mouth and had fun, or I wish I had not been scared and just whatever, or I wish I had just not been so fearful and hid for those three seasons in my office. Like, but now I just look back and I go, oh, my last year, like I really just spent the last like five shows just sitting there going like, this is Saturday Night Live. Like, and like literally just soaking it all in and just going like, wow, this was nuts.
What has it been like to be a former SNL cast member? The idea of a former SNL cast member.
In the beginning, it was terrifying. It was a weird thing. It realized how much your brain had changed, because like a week later, like that Monday, like your brain just starts going, okay, like what joke are you going to tell Gwyneth Paltrow tonight at pitch? And it's just like, you don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And or also that itch of like, oh my God, my Uber driver is hilarious. I'm going to play him this weekend. Oh wait, I'm not on Saturday Night Live anymore. Mm-hmm. And like that definitely happened. Definitely was. I remember like the first summer back, they had started those Weekend Update Thursdays, which they had done when I was on the show, but then they hadn't done for a while. And that was like the first thing that I saw coming back, and I could not watch it. Like, I was just like, I felt like it was like watching an ex-girlfriend have sex with somebody else. And now it's like, now I just find it entertaining.
Yeah. Did you feel people being like, why aren't you Eddie Murphy? Like, you've left SNL. Shouldn't you be Eddie Murphy? Shouldn't you be Adam Sandler right now?
The best part is right now is I'm on a TV show that starts this week. And I love seeing, it gets very nice to see people going like, oh, we're so happy Bobby's back. Like, he was gone for so long, or like stuff like, you know, like it's so good to see him back. And like, I've been working consistently, but yeah. It really makes you realize like, it's like, SNL is this, you know, it's like the Yankees, like it's like this thing that people know about, you know. And it's like where have you been? I'm like, I'm on DuckTales. You can watch DuckTales. It's very well written. Like, like I'm on a lot of cartoons. I'm working. I'm writing. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. But it's just, it's crazy. It's all insane. I'm very happy, and I'm glad that I am. I'm glad that it didn't break me, because I loved it and I still.
You didn't. I do want to ask. You mentioned that. You needed to leave SNL to start being like you. SNL sort of, you're like, once I leave SNL, I can start being a person. And I've heard you phrase
it
that, and I was like, what does that mean? And what does SNL prevent you from being a person mean?
Well, I think maybe for me personally, that statement just meant there's definitely a before and after SNL in my life. And and as a child, I dreamed of being on that show, and you know, you dream of doing something and then it happens, and it's a pretty crazy thing. Mm-hmm. And then that thing ends. And then there was a part of me that went, well, so do I just die? Like, like, is it just like now? Like, and then there's part of you that goes, but me personally in my journey, I went like, you fucking idiot. Like, you really didn't plan any of this out, huh? You just hoped for the best and tried to, you know, met enough funny people and did that. And then afterwards I kind of went like, oh boy, I have no idea. So I started a family, got happy, and then luckily Tina Fey still thinks I'm funny.
I want to ask you about it, because it feels like, you know, there's like the idea of being a part of SNL when you work there, and it seems like the idea of SNL is a family or whatever, but then there's the sort of like, you leave SNL and you then get part in those projects, which feels like the sort of larger idea of family. And, you know, you're in Kimmy Schmidt, and then you did that episode of Documentary Now, and now you're on Mr. Mayor. Does it feel like that to be part of then the sort of SNL television universe?
I think I have worked consistently for the past 3 years since I have left Saturday Night Live. And I think you could count on a handful of those jobs that no Saturday Night Live people are in them.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of, you know, like it just, I did a cartoon. I asked 20 of my SNL friends to be in it. Like, it's just like it happened. Like it's just this network of friends, but But you also end up in things with them
and
work together. Like Tina Fey put me in Sisters. She put me in 30 Rock, and now she's put me in this Mr. Mayor. And like, I will be forever grateful to her almost more than Lorne Michaels, because Lorne gave me the chance, you know, but Tina's continuing that chance. And it's a crazy thing. My first episode was when Tina did Sarah Palin. I remember sitting there watching her. And then the other day we're talking on Zoom and I'm just like, what's happened? What has happened? This is wonderful.
Are you a type of person that when that happened, you're like, one day me and Tina are going to be friends. We're going to work together.
No, I'm the opposite. I'm the one who goes like, oh, I just texted Tina, so I have to act like a human being who is a normal human being and isn't still terrified. But I will say she may be one of the human beings who is best at making you feel comfortable.
She is the greatest.
There, I've been trying to think of a metaphor of what I imagine it's like to like be a part of a Tina Fey, Robert Carlock show as a comedian, like what it's like to get a character written for you to get to say those jokes. And I imagined it being like getting your portrait painted by like a Dutch master or whatever, where they can like bring out your sort of true comedic beauty. What is it like to perform for them to write for you?
It's crazy. It was the same feeling. I got offered a sitcom in between a sitcom that it got canceled after SNL. I got offered another sitcom, and you know, after SNL is a very weird time. And I went like, I just had a baby. Maybe I should take this sitcom job. I just did a sitcom. I did, you know, it did not go the way I thought it was going to go. So maybe I should take this job for money. I have a family now. And I went, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And the next day I get a call saying, hey, do you want to do this like day thing on Kimmy Schmidt? And I was like, what? Yes. Like, of course. And Carlock was writing that episode. And when I got the script, it was like a one episode, one off thing. And I went in that day and came home to my wife. And I was like, I don't know how to explain what just happened. I feel kind of like the way I felt the first day I went to UCB and saw a UCB show where I went like, oh, I could do that. I had been on 30 Rock, and I had heard of Carlock, like the legend, you know, of him through SNL. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, as a writer there, but I had never worked with him, and I kind of hit it off with him. And I came home that day going like, I've never wished I was on a television show more than Kimmy Schmidt. Like that was I feel like the way they write super dense, kind of stuff, I was just like, it's hard and it's all over the place and you got to watch it a couple times, and I love it. And it's kind of like Janet, like in the sense of it's absurd, but it's very grounded. Even though Janet is nowhere near the quality of it. But well, maybe Brian stuff.
What do you feel like? Do you feel like does having it, especially when you are the lead of a show or one of the leads of the show, that having that focus paid on you, like you've learned about yourself as a comedian based on like how they write you?
Well, yeah, I mean, like it's definitely, I remember sitting down with Tina and her telling me like they're doing this show and they'd like, they wrote this part for me and they'd like me to play. And I was like, you know, you're like, what? Like, and every day that I go into work on Mr. Mayor, I go like, I cannot believe that I have a job in comedy where every single line, like 95% of the work is done for me already. Mm-hmm. Like it's already, they know me, she knows me well. And then there's like every third script, there's something that Jaden does where I'm like, all right, that feels a little too close to home. but to be very honest, like it's me. I see it, and it's just in the same way that Janet is me and Drunk Uncle is me. I am not a racist, you know? But like when I'm drunk, I say dumb stuff. But you know what I mean? Like it's every single character on Mr. Mayor. Like I think that's, people haven't seen it yet. I can't wait for people to see it because it feels like characters you know already. And every single one of the people in the show is just a heightened, extremely heightened, silly version of themselves, and they are having fun playing it.
as we wrap up, I imagine, you know, it's hard to think of yourself outside of yourself, but you are a fan of SNL. You've read the books. If you were watching it, what would you think about Bobby Moynihan's run on the show?
Wow, that's interesting. I would like to think where I put myself in my head is like, if I was lucky enough to be considered in the realm of like a Chris Parnell, I would be the happiest man alive, because Chris Parnell, there's no difference between Chris Parnell and Phil Hartman to me. Like they're equally as amazing and useful on that show. And when you're a fan of the show and you look at it like a baseball team, kind of like I would be extremely happy. I don't know. Is that cocky to say? I think he's absolutely the best. Just like I'm extremely happy with where I ended up. I have a drunk uncle bobblehead, and that makes me happy too.
It's just so funny to say that, because I was like, I said Chris Parnell when I was like, I was talking to my colleague Meg about asking you this question. I was like, I think of him as sort of like the Chris Parnell type tier of SNL people. So it was amazing that you said that.
It's weird to talk about SNL in that fan way when people start saying like, oh, the Chris Parnell tier. Like, it's like part of me wants to go fuck you, and part of me wants to go like, but my SNL terms, like, you know, like,
yeah,
and it's because how dare you, like, you know, like, how dare any of us say that? But like,
it's, I mean, that's SNL. That's like what's,
yeah, what, that's what it is.
That's like, that's what's I imagine before you're on it, what's fun is to be like, oh, they're casting Jason to play this type of guy. Like,
oh, I still do. Do you not do? I mean, I still do my favorite, who would be like, my dream is that for the 50th season, and I'm going to just throw this out there because I want it out in the universe, is that for the 50th season, they'll just do a full season of all-star cast. Cast members with a host, but like David Spade, Melissa Villaseñor, Tim Kazurinsky, just whoever gets written into the sketch from the entirety of SNL gets
it. SNL All-Stars.
Or just do like a special, SNL All-Stars special, like one night. Come on, that should happen.
So that sound means it's time for our final segment. It's the laughing round. It's like a lightning round, but because this is a comedy show, it's called the laughing round.
So, told you I was going to do a sound effect. Now you got to leave it in.
Yeah, Bobby said he was going to do a sound effect. they're shorter questions, but honestly, a lot of them are SNL questions. Do you have a favorite joke, like a street joke?
Probably not. I mean, what did the farmer say when he lost his tractor?
What?
Where's my tractor? It's the worst joke in the world, but it's still, like, as a child, it made me laugh. But whenever somebody asks me that question about, like, what's your favorite joke? The first thing I think of is Jason Sudeikis used to do the warm-ups in the studio. Like, you know, like at 11:15, he comes out, starts going, hey, everybody, this is the SNL band. And like, you know, he had a lot of shtick that he did every week. And it was always, he was great at it. But one time he told a joke and it like didn't get a laugh. It kind of bombed. And Lenny Pickett behind him just went like, ha! Like kind of like laughed at him. And Jason was like, oh, you got a joke? And Lenny Pickett, without skipping a beat, just grabbed the mic and went, oh, wait, I don't want to screw it up. he just grabs the mic and goes, well, why do musicians go on the road?
Why?
The whole audience goes, why? He goes, to visit their kids. And it's not it just broke me. It was just that Lenny Pickett, like, annihilated in the SNL stage very, very quickly. And it got a big laugh. It just made me laugh a great deal.
Is there a sketch or character that you wish you could have had as stolen? Like it was everything's the same. No one knows you stole it, but essentially you got to live in a world where this character was yours, or this sketch was one that you got to perform in.
Oh my, that's I feel like that's a fantastic SNL question that's never been phrased that way. Oh, gosh. I mean, anything Farley did. For some reason, the first thing that came to mind was the Alien sketch with Deion Sanders with Farley where his pants fell down. Anything Farley did. But I would never do it,
yeah.
If that makes sense. I would never do, like, yeah, because you don't.
I've talked to you about David Pumpkins, whenever that was, is an oral history year afterwards. We've talked to you about Kings of Catchphrase Comedy. So I wanted to ask you about other sketches of yours that I've loved. And just whatever you remember. And one that is one of my, was when you and Cecily play the two people that who think they're going to get fired and then roast the entire staff. Tell me whatever you want about that sketch.
Neil Casey. And I we're very good friends. Neil Casey, UCB guy, he was in Ghostbusters. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He got SNL. He became a writer. We shared an office for a bit, and we had known each other from UCB for years. And I think I just wanted to do something with Cecily, and like we just kind of started going back and forth about getting fired and yelling at people. And I remember it started where like me and Cecily were just. Cecily just came and just walked in my room, went, "What are you writing this week, bitch?" And just like said it really close in my face for no reason. And I feel like that's where it started, was just like being aggressive towards people for no reason. And then Cecily said, "My name's Dana." And Neil Casey said, "Your name is Nith." And I said, "What?" And he was like Kenneth. And it was just like that made us laugh. And then it became like, it was kind of hard. Like, I remember Warren not loving those sketches because they were long. Because in my mind, in my SNL fan mind, which I should have turned off sometimes, I was like, this is me and Cecily's sketch with the entire cast.
Yeah, yeah.
And every single person will get a good joke. Because it's art, like, you know, it was very like that. And Lauren would be like, "Can you cut four people out of that sketch?" And I would be like, "No, it's the whole cast." Like, you know, and like now looking back, I should have been like, "Yeah, yeah, no sweat. It'll be funnier if it's shorter."
It's so funny because in my head, that's what Lauren would have liked about the sketch. It's like, "Oh, good, it's the whole cast."
Well, it's not that it was the whole cast. It was time. They were a solid 5 or 6 minutes every time. And they were fun. So, like, I remember the second one, like, Kevin Hart started, like, improvising and laughing. And, like, Tim Robinson was always the funniest part of everything. So it was, like, that too. Like, that's what I love about those sketches was his character, Tim's character.
The other sketch I want to quickly ask you about, which I think is a deep cut, but it's one of my favorite things you did in the show, which was One Magical Night, the Katy Perry sketch, where you play two people who meet in a bar who instantly have everything in common. But I ain't got nothing if
I ain't got love. First thing you need to know about me, I'm bad news. Trouble follows me everywhere.
I'll take my chances. Favorite drink, go.
Scotch on the rocks. Nickname in high school, stupid idiot.
Favorite Ghostbuster?
Winston. Who's the boss?
Mona.
I feel like it's like such a nice piece and like a different than a lot of the stuff you got to do on the show.
Yeah, that was another me and Tucker thing. It also led to the most awkward moment of my life on that thing because I was new on the show. It was a very weird sketch. And towards the end of it, Katy Perry goes like, "And we don't kiss in this sketch. Like they have to kiss at the end." And I just remember looking around and being like, I just want to like triple down. Like that was on camera. Like everyone heard that. Like I just remember not wanting to be a creep and just being like, it was her idea. And that was, I was super nervous about that. But yeah, it was a big swing. I remember that. I remember Lauren liked it, but it was definitely different. It felt like a piece,
yes,
rather than a sketch, which is something I noticed Lauren subtly would do. He would call something a piece when it wasn't necessarily the funniest thing in the world. but to be honest, that one I would hold that in easily in the top 10 of stuff I got to do on SNL, just because of the feeling I had the second it ended.
Yeah.
Which was like, the second that sketch ended, I went like, hey, I think I wrote like a pretty cool sketch. Like that was fun. Like
there is a moment at the end because you tip Jason and you smile at each other, and I'm like, you're really this like. Really
I was genuinely floating on the clouds in that moment.
So I was talking about you with Meg, and she was like, "We're talking about Ask Dan." And she's like, we should rank all the ways, all the times, all of Ask Dan's death. And I'm like, I should ask Bobby to rank all of his deaths. And I can't imagine you remember them. They're all pretty similar, but I will run through them and see if you could rank his deaths, or at least pick your favorite of them. So the first one is Crunkmas Carnival. They're going to have Ask Dan has a wake, but you pop up and you say, you're still alive. And you're like, I'm going to live forever. But they cut off and then it says you're dead. Then in Crunk-Ass Easter Festival, you say, check the tomb on the third day as if you're going to rise. And then you go, you know, and then it's cuts off that when you say you're going to live forever. Yeah. Then in Columbus Day Ass Blast, you say, you know, I'm still alive. Then you go, I think I'm having a heart attack. Then you say, no, it passed.
I'm okay.
And then you go, I'm going to live forever. And then you die in the middle of that. the first one is in the parody of Miracles. You say, Ask Dan, is the first time you say, I'm going to live forever. And then, the last one is Donkey Punch the Ballot. Ask Dan is finally reunited with his twin, Butt Dave, and then Ask Dan goes, there's something I've always wanted to ask you. And then he dies. And then Butt goes, Ass. And then it goes, there's something wrong with my brother.
Thank you for calling him Butt.
There's something wrong with my brother. And then it cuts off and then he dies.
That's right. I'm going to say Butt Dave was definitely the best. Also, a piece of trivia. Butt Dave was originally Jeff Bridges. But Jeff Bridges did not show up for the taping, so I had to do it. Jeff Bridges was hosting that week, I think, and he was going to play Butt Dave, and then he didn't. And then I think we ended up doing it. Like, they ended up showing it, like, it got cut. Mm-hmm. So they ended up showing it, like, on the Ben Stiller episode or something, and I end up playing Butt Dave.
Oh, interesting. Maybe? Oh, because it was the, yeah, it was
yeah. The original Under Underground aired, like, didn't air, but it was, like, on, like, 4 or 5 shows before it finally aired, I think. And the first time they did it, it was Jason and January Jones, not Nassim.
Wow. Yeah. That's unbelievable. She is.
Yeah.
She's
Little Blaster.
She is Little Blaster. All right, two more. This is going too much, but this is very fun for me. Do you have a comedy crush, a person whose comedy you have a crush on?
I mean, yeah, millions, but like when you said that, like, I think I just realized recently how much Jack Black has really entertained me my entire life and how supremely talented he is. Zach Galifianakis, also Live at the Purple Onion, is something I throw on all the time. Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen together.
That's great. All right. Last question is, do you have a sketch that you thought was really, really funny that either made it to Dress or didn't make it to Dress or got cut at some point that you thought was funny and either the audience did it or the show didn't, but you'll go to your grave being like, that was funny. Everyone was wrong. This is the funniest thing that I did.
I definitely had more things get cut that I was like, oh, that one-off thing that I wrote that I really loved, I wish I had gotten that on, but because of the timing or like, I remember writing some, or like Seth wrote something for the Lost finale that like we could have only done then and like that didn't get on and that'll kill me forever.
Do you remember what the beats of that were?
It wasn't like anything insane. It was Alec Baldwin was hosting. It was the week. It was the week Lost was ending, and the whole joke was I was Hurley, and the rest of the cast were people from Lost. And the whole joke was just Alec Baldwin came out of the bushes in a tiki thing with like tiki drinks. It was just like I got a whole like village built back here, and it was just Alec Baldwin being Alec Baldwin.
Sure,
and it was very funny. I just wanted. I loved those sketches where you got to be part of a universe that you love. Although I will say, Seth wrote something. Seth wrote a sketch for when Mike Myers hosted. It was a cold open that was maybe like the most SNL-y thing ever. And it didn't get made, and it kills me to this day. It was when Inception came out, mm-hmm. and when Mike Myers hosted, it was essentially like Wayne and Garth it started with like Wayne and Garth in the van, like Inception, yeah. like in slow motion, and it just went through all this crazy SNL character stuff, but the slow motion shot of them was just Wayne's World, and it was all these old SNL characters, and then the big reveal at the end was that Toonses was driving the van. And like, it was just one of those, like, it was just one of those, like, my, like, if me and you, like, SNL fans yeah. would have been like, no, like, you know, would have been like, oh my God, that was the greatest thing that ever happened. But it didn't.
That really, I'm so bummed. I'm happy now that is now out in the world that at least he had that idea.
It was so cool. I think, like, I would try and do that a lot, and it did not. I feel like it was frowned upon. I remember writing, like, when Seth left, I tried to write, like, a really beautiful thing where Seth said goodnight and Drunk Uncle came over to him and gave him a drink. And we walked to the edge of the Weekend Update table, and there was a door. And I opened it, and it was snowing. And we stepped outside and it was cold and there was another door that just said Weekend Update Pub. And we opened that door and it was all the Weekend Update characters sitting in the bar, and Seth came in and everybody clapped and cheersed him, like, and it cut around, like, and like I wrote stuff like that, like fantasy SNL sketches while I was sitting in my office at 4 a.m. going like, there's the Christmas tree, I'm on SNL. And Lauren would be like, no, I don't think so.
that is perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much. This is so good.
You're welcome.
I could literally, I was like, oh, what about this? Like, talk about the sketch I rewatch so often is the when you play the teenage Sopranos.
Oh, that too. Like, that's my biggest gift that Seth ever gave me. Seth, the only time at SNL, the only time Seth pitched that idea, and I don't think he was going to write it. I think it was just like a one. I don't know if he was, but it was the only time ever. I hate doing impressions. I ran over to Seth and I was like, if you write that, please give me the chance to play that part. I will practice forever. And I love that sketch.
It's so good. All right. The end. This was so good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. What a bless.
That's it for another episode of Good One. Mr. Mayor airs on NBC Thursday nights. Saturday Night Live airs on NBC Saturday nights. Follow Bobby on social media at Baby Moynihan. Good One is produced by myself, Jelani Carter, Hannah Rosen, and Camila Salazar. Gautam Srikishan did our theme song. Write a review and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, please. Email any comments, questions, or laughing around suggestions to goodonepodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at goodonepodcast. I'm Jesse David Fox, and you can follow me at Jesse David Fox. Good One is a production of Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools. I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running. But they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon, taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.